And we're back, and 'tis the season for horror, and 'tis the season for scary movies, but also 'tis the season for allergies as the season changed. So my apologies today if my voice is a little off, my throat is attacking me in the night, but we're Mike and Oscar, and I'd rather have my throat attack me than a large butcher's knife from a psychomaniac killer, Michael Myers, which is what we're dealing with today. We are doing Halloween's 4 and 5. Welcome to another episode of Mike and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike 1. This is co-host also Mike.
My throat's bothering me, but I'll talk for the first 17 minutes of the introduction. No, you sound like an older Steven Tyler today. It's a little raspier.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. You know, later Aerosmith's okay. Also, I think I'm going to heckle you at the beginning of each episode now. I think that's starting to work. It's becoming our shtick.
Yeah, that's the shtick. All right.
What a jerk I am.
Jaded wasn't a bad song. It was under. Right. Nobody heard it, but when you say later Aerosmith, I think of like the American Idol judging days.
That's now Aerosmith. I don't mean now Aerosmith. I mean like before Liv Tyler became famous. Aerosmith.
I see. So pre Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings stuff. True. Right. Well, we're not doing Aerosmith today. That'll be saved for another time. Although you may have just heard all our conversations and thoughts that we have about it. We're going back to the world of Michael Myers and on the heels of finishing up the Laurie Strode storyline. And if you listen to us on Wednesday, we had that All the Horror episode where we were playing with a lot of our dear friends, podcast friends there, where they were getting into the headspace of a horror villain. That just dropped Wednesday.
That was cool.
We're back. It was very fun and very interesting, very introspective to a lot of people that we talk to on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And we're back on Michael Myers' home turf. We're returning to Haddonfield, Illinois, in the lead up to David Gordon Green's Halloween movie coming out October 19th.
So yeah, Halloween 4 is the return of Michael Myers, cast and crew here, directed by Dwight H. Little. He's also directed Murder at 1600, episodes of 24, Prison Break, The Practice, Nikita, Bones, and Scorpion. So Little started off doing movies in his career. Murder at 1600 was probably the one highlight there. Primarily been a TV series director for hire ever since.
I like The Practice.
Yeah?
I was a big fan of it back in the day.
As the legalese expert of the dialogue world. That dialogue was okay for
that
you?
That had nothing to do with law, though. It was like they just happened to be lawyers that were dealing with some crazy shit.
They just happened to be lawyers, and then there's like how many, what do they call those three-part romances? Threesomes, but also love triangles.
Yeah. We have one of those in this movie, Halloween 4.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Alan B. McElroy is the love triangle extraordinaire here. Gets the screenplay credit. He's also written Spawn, John Cena's The Marine, Wrong Turn, and episodes of The Vampire Diaries. One of the more interesting interviews on the documentary we watched. We'll talk about later.
It's an illustrious screenwriting career there. Dealing with a lot of legends.
He's been going hard for a while. He wishes he did the sequel instead of having whoever else did the Halloween 5.
Yeah, that's when we were going to reference that documentary a lot, you'll get into it, but that's seems to be the kind of a trend. Nobody was crazy about what happened in Halloween 5.
Nobody was happy with 5. Story credits also go to Donnie Lipsius, Larry Ratner, and Benjamin Ruffner. Sadly, none of whom had a lot of highlights in their careers on IMDb after this. Halloween 4 stars Donald Krueger as Dr. Freddy Loomis. I don't understand what a pun is. Seriously, Donald Pleasance is Sam Loomis once again. He struck a match in the Halloween 2 Room of Gas. And that blew up the Room of Gas, enough gas to blow up all of Haddonfield.
Yes.
And the results is that he has a yucky hand, and he has a boo-boo over his right cheek.
Well, if you can't kill the man, you might as well not be able to kill the doctor either.
The Return of Michael Myers also stars Ellie Cornell as Rachel Carruthers. She'll also return in Halloween 5's Revenge there. Danielle Harris is the little girl having bad Michael Myers dreams. She is Jamie Lloyd in this movie.
So she's the linchpin of the 4 and 5, and I guess to a point 6, but mainly 4 and 5 universe. We're done with Laurie Strode's timeline. That went 1 and 2 and picked up in H2O. But now for purposes of this alternate timeline, Laurie Strode has passed away, and she leaves behind the legacy of a niece who is a daughter. Right, who is Jamie Lloyd, who I thought was her niece originally when I was first watching this. A daughter who is Jamie Lloyd, who I guess now Michael knows exists and needs to come back to kill, just like he was showing after his sister.
So, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, The Last Boy Scout, a voice on Nickelodeon's The Wild Thornberries. Danielle Harris had a nice career as a child actor for a long time. When she gets to 17 years old, she gets cast out of Halloween 6, but she's in 4 and 5. She'll grow up and play Annie Brackett, go figure, in Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Which is a lot of weird feelings for a lot of people that are horror fans, because we all grew up with her. But Jamie Lloyd being this character, this kid, yeah. And then in Halloween, the Rob Zombie Halloween, she gets naked. And so we're used to seeing this little girl, and now she's grown up and getting, and we're like, oh, this is weird. That you're not Laurie, you're not Jamie, yeah, you're Annie, now you're naked. I don't know what to feel.
you shouldn't. That's bizarre. I guess, is that the first Halloween she's in?
Yeah.
I'm an idiot, right. Because Annie Brackett dies in the first Halloween.
Spoiler alert, but this is also our fifth episode.
Yes, three Hatchet sequels, the Victor Crowley slasher series.
I have to watch those. I mean to watch those.
I've seen the first two.
Yeah, good, bad, and
they're
different.
They're very, very bloody. They're very campy. They're kind of fun. They're not terrible. I know
I have
some
to
people
see them, yeah.
Really
that's exactly
like them.
What I expect. Your explanation is exactly what I expect.
There's a lot of heads that are lost and then shoots of blood.
Yes.
Into the air.
Tarantino fans.
Like that. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on. So, again, Danielle Harris will return in Halloween 5. George P. Wilbur plays Michael Myers, and I just have to say his body type is a little strange for this movie. He was cast mid-movie. They fired the other shape.
Yeah.
Going into the film, I forget his name, but this guy has like a defensive tackle build. He has like a designated hitter build, and all the other Michael Myers were tall, lean,
right,
first baseman.
And we're not getting a little meat on the, you know, tight little ends. Chunkier, a little beefier. Yeah,
it's very strange. This guy's got narrow shoulders. So he's got like Michael Myers while Michael Myers was in his coma, beefed up a little bit.
He was just doing sit-ups the
10-year
whole time.
10-year coma.
I don't know that it's necessarily a bad, because Michael Myers' strength is a big part of these two movies, too. He's much more physically imposing than he was a knife-wielding maniac from the first two movies. But yeah.
I prefer Michael Myers with a neck. That's all I'm saying.
Right. You don't want a juggernaut Michael Myers. You prefer like a wide receiver Michael Myers.
Yeah, I don't get this. I mean, this doesn't make. I mean, this, he should be a haggard prisoner of a mental hospital who's crazy. Like that's why I think.
So you want Charlie Manson is what you want?
No, I like Nick Castle.
Right. All right.
Nick
yeah.
Castle, tall and lean, wide receiver type. Yeah.
And he should be quick, too. I agree. We saw him when he was escaping Smith's Grove in the first movie. He was quick running up the car. I don't understand why that's never been capitalized or used again.
But George Wilbur is an excellent stuntman. Did a nice work in this movie here. He's had stunt work highlights in his career from films like Die Hard, Total Recall, and The Perfect Storm on his resume. Yeah,
those are all great. And we also are continuing the trend of people with awesome Hollywood names playing Michael. And Nick Castle, Dick Warlock, George Wilbur.
Wilbur! Ivan Drago's manager, Michael Pataki, plays Dr. Hoffman. He is just the right kind of wrong for Donald Pleasance to argue with here.
Yes.
Dr. Hoffman is the genius who wants to transport Michael Myers out of his hospital on, of course, October 30th, 10-year anniversary of his killings.
What could possibly go wrong?
Should they have perhaps thumbed through the file, Michael?
You couldn't wait till November 1st.
Like, yeah.
36 hours, he'd be asleep.
You know, just thumb through the files there, because you'll see that date so that Michael Myers doesn't thumb through a forehead. You like that setup and joke there? I hate my copy. He's got 363 other days a year to transport Michael Myers.
That's like trying to interrupt Happy Gilmore before hockey tryouts, you know? Oh, 363 more days to hockey season.
Boast, that's an Adam Sandler joke.
Yeah, it is. Happy Gilmore. God, are we that old that we need to actually clarify what that is?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, my Lord.
Boast stars Sheriff Meeker. He has the instinct for crime that my family members and I have for skiing or snowboarding.
Continuing the legacy of great Haddonfield PD.
I think there's a cat up a tree. Let me take this whole stakeout and mobilize all these cops over to that tree instead of where Michael Myers probably is. What the hell is wrong with him? He's just like an idiot for two movies.
So much worse, too. It gets so much worse.
Oh, my goodness. Kathleen Kinmont is Kelly Meeker. Sasha Jensen is Brady. I thought that was Johnny Drama. It is not.
No. No, it is not.
Gene Ross is Earl. Carmen Philpy from The Wedding Singer. He's the old homeless man in all the Adam Sandler movies there, Michael.
So we have a legitimate cast here with a lot of Hollywood and cinematic experience.
And Adam Sandler movies, Michael. Raymond O'Connor, Jeff Olson, Karen Alston, Nancy Borgenicht, and David Jensen also star, but star is a strong word.
Yeah, and so is movie for the purposes of these two films. Four isn't terrible, and we both have come to appreciate some of the things Four has, but man, when we get to Five, let's talk about specs. Halloween Four, The Return of Michael Myers, directed by Dwight Little and stars Donald Pleasence, Ellie Cornell, Daniel Harrison, Bo Starr. It's got an 88-minute runtime and was released October 21st, 1988, so they're learning their lesson a little bit and not going
moving it up
right up until the Halloween date. They're waiting a week or so to let it marinate and let the creatures come out at night. We both recommend that you watch the documentary, Halloween. It covers 4, 5, and 6. It's called Back to Basics. It's available on YouTube. And, a nice hour and a half. Probably not as revealing or amazing or rich, I'll say, I guess, as the documentary for the first two.
Yeah, the inside story. Movies, but, and I like the one on 2 as well. They talked about more about the fandom. I thought it was an interesting angle. This is basically focused on the production, right, what they think what they the got right and wrong.
And all that. And,
which was interesting. I love those documentaries.
Yeah, I do too. I really do too. In that documentary, we realized that executive producer Mustafa Akkad was the driving force in bringing back Michael Myers. We talked about this when we started with Halloween 3. They kind of... Carpenter said he'd do one. He was executive producer on 2, even though he also punched up the script a ton. And then he said, that's it for me. I'm done with these Michael Myers. This is supposed to be an anthology. We're supposed to have a new movie every year.
Yep.
Michael Myers shouldn't come back. They put out 3. Tepid reception. And so Mustafa Akkad, who's been at the helm for the franchise and owns the title throughout, is... kind of been the guy that said, look, we got to get this guy back. And his son is actually in the documentary saying Michael Myers is Halloween. We came to that conclusion.
That's what they realized. There's an equal sign between the monster and the franchise.
Which we probably could have told you back in 1984 or 5 anyway. But sure. They finally got to the conclusion, so that's what matters.
I'm barely alive.
Paul Freeman produces and Trankus International as a production house once again. They shot Halloween 4 in Salt Lake City, Utah. There were cornfields, barns, houses. They avoided the mountains and produced. Producer Paul Freeman did that purposely, obviously, to try to emulate what Haddonfield, Illinois was while on location in Utah. Utah was a location that he was used to shooting, he said, and he knew that there was a rich talent pool there and a lot of good scenery, so...
I thought it was a nice setting.
I did, too.
I thought it really works. It's a lot of fun.
I was shocked to hear it was Utah, to learn originally, because I thought middle America.
The news of the other day, look at New Mexico getting bolstered up with all the Netflix production houses. They're leaving L.A. and they're moving east.
Going Roswell.
Come to Connecticut.
You just got to get those aliens out there. Halloween 4 was distributed by Galaxy International Releasing and 20th Century Fox. The film's budget was off the heels. 2 and 3 were made for about $2.5 million each. That's a big step up from the $325,000 that each one was made for. This one gets double the budget. They bring back Michael Myers. They double the budget, even though it is also put out some 7 years after Michael Myers was last on screen. They give him a $5 million budget. And the only box office gross figure that we could find is a $17.7 million number, which is good for 5th all-time in Halloween franchise. It'll probably move to 6th soon, but we aren't told of the international domestic split or anything like that. We do know it made over $8 million. Is that 8 or 6?
6.
It made over... No. We do know it made over $6 million its opening weekend, but its critical numbers were not that great.
No.
Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 29% right now. Average critic score of 3.8 out of 10. Not wonderful. Audience score higher, but still not wonderful. 53%. Average audience score of 3.1 out of 5. It carries a 34 Metascore. And the IMDb number, it's okay for a horror movie, especially an 80s horror movie, but not going to blow anyone away. Out of 5.9 out of 10 on 35,000 plus reviews.
So, a profitable movie. Audiences liked it. That's something for the...
They can hold on to that, yeah. It's
And that's pretty good.
It's not... You want to make money with these, right? That's the whole point of doing these low-budget horror movies, and this one seemed to be, again... Anytime they release a Halloween, it seems to at least make 3 times, 4 times its production budget, so that's good news, and they're going to make some money off the top of it, it would seem. On video that we've seen, and we can research, there were 7 major video releases of this film between VHS, DVD, Blu-ray collections, etc., so it's got to be making some cash somewhere, and never mind all the evil parents buying clown costumes for their kid for the holiday.
Right, merchandising had to do well.
Merchandising!
Some highlights from that documentary in terms of production. Nuggets, Halloween 4, Back to Basics is, again, the title. Artistically, they only wanted to reference Halloween 1, but the screenwriter also included elements of H2 that they retconned pretty much off the bat.
Yeah, this makes no sense. They're so insistent that they only wanted to reference Halloween 1, and yet you start with Dr. Loomis, obviously disfigured from the fire that ended Halloween 2.
Yeah, and they do all this exposition in an elevator ride down to hell where they're transporting Michael Myers.
Jesus ain't got nothing to do with this place.
From one mental hospital to the other. It's not. It's a fairly well-written exposition dump as exposition dumps go, but it is just, it's abominable. Yeah, I mean, as that scene is structured into
the
film.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, really, in terms of the dialogue we get over these next two movies, it's really not that offensive,
and Dwight,
comparatively.
Dwight H. Litter's like, all right, listen, we're going to retcon some stuff. We got to catch the audience up. If I'm going to do an exposition dump, let me get it all into one scene. Let me have a creepy character give it.
Right.
So, again, as it goes, this is fairly well done. But, of course, it's just breaking every rule.
Yeah, we're not breaking a lot of new ground here as far as like what Halloween 1 did. And we're just kind of, this is a tried and true sequel.
Yes, I liked how they talked through the special effects of this movie and the stuntmen working with the younger actresses. I thought that was sweet on how they didn't want to traumatize her. They made sure that Michael Myers had no mask,
right,
you know, as he's walking
hiding
around
under
set.
The bed, and yeah.
They made sure that the special effects people showed her how they were doing all the fake gags. There's not a lot of blood in this movie.
It's one of those things, and it is why we like these behind-the-scenes documentaries, because you really don't think about the impact that these are human beings and stuff, although there's characters on a screen.
She's a little girl.
Yeah, you think about how it's actually a little girl, basically her film debut, sitting there, needing to be grabbed by the ankle from under the bed, needing to be intimidated with a guy with a knife in front of her, and these are real people. These are human emotions.
And she's melting down and freaking out.
Right.
We'll talk about her performance a little later, but she's freaking the hell out, so whatever they're doing, it didn't take her out of what she had to accomplish
there.
So, the Michael Myers mask showed up.
Oh, God.
Pink face with white hair.
First of all, how do you not return them immediately? How do you actually go through with, just going to have to use them? Like, no, you have one job. It's the return of Michael Myers. You can't screw up the calling card.
There's a scene in this movie where they use the white hair.
It looks so bad.
In the school. And it's just silly, silly, silly. And you're like, wait, what? Is that really Michael? He's got white hair.
It looked like John Tesh took over for Michael Myers at one point from the back.
It looked like he was, crawling around in the asbestos ceilings.
It was terrible. It made it awful. I don't know how it made Final Cut.
They screwed it up, basically. They talked about all these gaffes throughout the production.
Yeah, and the explanations make no sense. It was 4 a.m. and we were very overtired, so that's how it got through. What are you talking about?
The one guy's funny because he's like, mid-production, I was fired.
Yeah, I was done. I saw that. I was fired in front of the entire cast.
I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it was really funny. You don't expect them to have all these gaps, and it's not like they can order, for them to reorder it, they got to make a phone call, they got to send paperwork or whatever.
Yeah.
So they had to repaint all the masks, and then they screwed that up. There was paint smell inside the mask, and then a stuntman got fired later on, and he actually got rehired. Oh my God, lots of drama on set.
And even before the blonde hair comes into play, or you learn about what happened with the masks and stuff, just as a Halloween fan, as a fan of the franchise, looking at this movie, I've always thought this movie had by far the worst mask. And I never knew the backstory to it, and that's why it is the word. It's because it's not a real Michael Myers mask, but right. it always looks so weird and clunky.
It's totally goofy. I don't think they widened out the eyes. That was another thing. It was
they couldn't. They made mention of that in the documentary. The director, God bless this guy, this director, for taking this on and putting his best foot forward. But
made money.
There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't add up, just if you think about it rationally. But the director, I guess, on set wanted the eyes widened on a whim in like a 3-minute cut time, and the prop guy was like, I can't do that because you'll be putting an actor's head in a mask with no ventilation, full of fresh glue that hasn't dried.
That he'll just pass out. Right. Yeah, exactly. So Donald Pleasance, they also made a scar on his face look like a giant egg at first. And then they reshot all the scenes with his scar, right, with a new scar that after the dailies, him and his girlfriend made fun of him for having. Right. So he's like, I want a new scar. I want to reshoot everything. They did that. And then, of course, they got all the film mixed up. And so half the movie, he's got egg scar.
I thought it looked different,
half
too,
the movie,
yeah,
he's got Freddy scar. It's just silly. So
how do you do that? Like, what do you mean you got mixed up? What does that mean?
I don't know. I will say, as a screenwriter, as a wannabe screenwriter, it was fun to watch Alan B. McElroy, who got the screenplay credit here. He was thrilled because they essentially shot the script that he wrote. Like, they didn't do a lot of rewrites. He basically gave them a script. They shot that script exactly, and he was very happy about that. He's like, however, it gave me false expectations for the rest of my career in Hollywood, because this would never happen again.
Right, you think there'd be no pushback whatsoever. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, he had to rewrite.
I am a genius.
Everything will go swimmingly here on. Anyway, Brady is the boyfriend character in,
yes,
the middle of that love triangle in this. He actually gagged on a blood tablet during his kill with Michael Myers, when Michael Myers,
sure,
lifts
him
up,
yep,
jacks him up, and he just spits it out like a...
I noticed that, and that made the final cut.
It makes the final cut. He's actually gagging on the blood tablet. He figured that they would just reshoot the
scene. Of course!
Because he, and all of a sudden, he's getting choked and lifted up. He's no longer afraid, and he's just like at the ballpark. That's what he does,
what,
in that scene.
Yeah,
they,
there's so many things that just don't make... And the explanation is, oh, we were pressed for time. I don't know what that means. You can't be pressed for time the entire film that you never call cut. And you never do a post-production.
It's very strange. And it didn't work. This is what holds this movie back a little bit. But some of it's awesomely bad.
Yes.
They did construct a roof and put it like 10 feet above the ground. They had stunt people and nets, you know, on the sides. But there was some danger for the Rachel and Danielle. They could fall off. Or,
yeah,
see
where they're running across the roof and all that. Yeah.
That was interesting. They had a stunt girl for this play for Danielle when she was being ripcorded down. I wanted to ask you this, Michael.
Yes.
Who the hell is allowing their six-year-old girl to be a stunt person in the movies in a slasher film for another six-year-old
There's
girl?
There's got to be just so many parents in Hollywood trying to ride the coattails of their kids. They're willing to do anything.
I would hope that, it's a stunt coordinator's kid, or it's just like a stunt person's kid, and they're training, they're grooming their kids.
I would doubt it.
Listen, I don't think that's safe. It's ridiculous. There was just a Washington Times article from 2017 in March talking about the stunt double for Logan. And this is still a practice that goes on today. So it's not a little person that's an adult that can handle danger.
It's an actual
child. It's an actual child being the stunt person. The last little nugget, and I referred to it earlier, was that Mustafa Akkad gets dizzy every time he sees blood. He is the executive producer putting a lot of the money behind this.
What a wild story.
That is why he doesn't like a lot of blood in his Halloween movies, and it was a big to-do later on in 5 when he's like, more blood. And he actually gives into it. But it's crazy to think how you have a slasher movie franchise.
One of the most infamous slasher franchises, yeah.
We'll pass
out. Can't do blood. Could you not kill him so hard?
All right, so Mike, you got a premise for us?
Is the IMDb plot premise. 10 years after his original massacre, the invalid Michael Myers awakens on Halloween Eve and returns to Haddonfield to kill his 7-year-old niece. Can Dr. Loomis stop him?
So, of course, Michael Myers escapes this half-baked attempt to transfer him on the eve of Halloween.
I thought it would have been really funny if they just acted like they transferred him and he got there safely and they put him away and then the credits rolled after like 3 minutes.
That would be great. That would be great. It's like if we cut the Aerosmith anecdote at the beginning of this episode and just made it like a 3-minute.
Right, yeah, just a dissertation about our feelings towards latter-day Steven Tyler.
So Michael escapes, has a confrontation with Loomis at a gas station, escapes again, almost hurts Loomis again. Loomis is on the trail, so kind of sequel-itis here. You're getting the same storyline.
Yeah.
Michael going ahead. Haddonfield, Loomis on his tail. This time Michael's going to kill his niece, Laurie Strode's daughter. who is also having telepathic dreams throughout this story, living with the Carruthers family, who Laurie Strode babysat when she was still living in Haddonfield there. So Michael basically comes back and he kills a lot of people. Kills everybody at the police station. What I like about this movie, we'll get into, is that the town is a little wiser. You have the cops that believe Loomis, essentially, from the jump. Loomis goes to the police station. The cops basically put a curfew on the town. The bar empties with a bunch of yokels in it.
The redneck militia.
And they form a posse, essentially, with all their guns. They try and get answers from the cop who doesn't want them to form this posse, but they do it anyways. But that's kind of cool. I think that it makes some sense. That's very good. And we have the sheriff basically getting mad at Loomis for helping this posse form. But
damn you.
That's a great scene. We'll talk about that in a minute. Basically, Michael killed everybody at the police station. He's stalking teenagers again, but he kills the police station first. And then he's stalking Rachel and this girl, Jamie, on Halloween night throughout their trick-or-treating. Jamie's bullied at school. She finally makes some friends, but basically she gets lost and Rachel's looking for Jamie. Rachel has this boyfriend crush that she wants, but also the sheriff's daughter, Meeker's daughter, has a crush. So there's a love triangle there. So essentially what happens is that the sheriff Meeker finds Rachel, who found Jamie, takes them back to his house while he's calling in the state police. He's got a deputy that's very inept that comes to help them guard the place. The boyfriend is there making time with the girl, the sheriff's daughter. So you have that love triangle playing out in a nightmarish fashion for all parties. Michael, of course, sneaks in the house before they board it up and put it on lockdown. Loomis just comes in and out willy-nilly, so he's not helping the security matters. Bottom line is that Michael ends up terrorizing everybody inside the house. Only the two girls get out. Loomis, of course, leaves to go investigate another whatever. The sheriff leaves because he's investigating a death of an old man that was just sitting out on his porch that the posse just shot up in a million pieces.
Destroyed with
Swiss
bullets.
Cheese. So, again, it makes sense. It makes sense that they would screw that up. So, basically, Michael has a confrontation and kills the sheriff's daughter. He kills the deputy. And then he has an awesome fight with Brady, the boyfriend, who is pretty courageous there. He goes after Rachel and Jamie on the roof. Rachel falls from the roof. Jamie runs away to the school. Loomis bumps into her. Why are you alone? They go to the school. Michael, they give Michael the slip at the school. Loomis gets beat up a little bit. Then the posse hears a fire alarm at the school with Jamie running out of it.
The heroic redneck militia.
And Rachel came in and saved her at the last second with a fire extinguisher. Michael can't handle fire extinguishers. So Rachel and Jamie get picked up by the militia. They're immediately persuaded to go out of town, to get the girls out of town, because, like, they're cowards. They don't want to fight Michael then and there. So now you have a car ride out of town, or a truck ride out of town, and Michael Myers, of course, is hiding underneath the car.
He's Cape Fearing it.
He totally kills everybody in the back seat, all those rednecks with guns. He breaks his way into the driver's seat almost, but Rachel takes the wheel, stops the car hard after they drove past all the state cops. I don't know why the state cops drive back to them yet again after going into Haddonfield,
well,
coming back.
I thought about that. My assumption was they saw these rednecks thrown from the car on the road. So they had
but they
to
were
pass
already passed.
Well, maybe there was more that we didn't see that since the Michael Myers truck went off-roading for a little bit.
It's
clunky.
It's clunky for sure. So whatever, there's a big showdown. All the cops versus Michael Myers. Of course, Jamie has to investigate Michael because she's feeling telepathically connected to him again as he's down.
Don't have kids.
Having been thrown from the car.
Just don't have kids.
All the cops shoot him into a sinkhole that's somehow there. I guess that's a sinkhole or a cavern.
Oh, we don't know what it is. We just know he's dead finally.
He's finally down to hell, as Loomis says. Anyway, he'll just fall down a river and he'll be fine.
You don't know that yet.
For Halloween 5. But essentially, we have the girls getting free, going back to the house, but the telepathically connected little girl, Jamie.
We have a nice homage. The Halloween 4 ends the way Halloween 1 begins. We see things through Jamie's eye. She dons the clown's mask. She commits an awful murder. Loomis is the one that finds her and gives this, like one of those blood curdling. And we fade to credits.
Yes.
So it's a nice homage at the end.
I like it more than I dislike it.
I agree.
And
it would have made more sense, I will say, if that was the precursor to Halloween 6. because the retcon job they tried to do in 5 is so tacky. But if that was the end and Halloween 6 was the immediate predecessor in the next this next sequel, it could have tied together nicely, but they didn't do that, but that's fine. Let's go through some best and worst scenes. We're really going to give our effort to get 4 and 5 done in one episode here without going 3 hours on you. So let's talk about some best scenes first, get them out of the way, because I have a feeling we're going to have a lot more to say about worst.
So thumb to the head kill in the ambulance.
Love it. Next best scene.
Great. I love that there's a posse, like I said. Fun scenes.
You like that? You like the redneck militia thing?
I like the lynch mob. I think it makes sense. I think that scene with Loomis and the sheriff at the front steps.
I have a couple questions for you. I'm going to bring up some references in pop culture, recent pop culture history. You tell me if they were influenced by this movie. Were the Nazis in the final season of Breaking Bad influenced by this redneck militia?
No.
Okay. Was De Niro's character in Cape Fear influenced by what Michael Myers did as far as hiding on the truck and sitting in silence?
Which was first?
This came out 3 years before 91's Cape Fear. I didn't see the original Cape Fear.
This was a huge hit. It's possible.
Because there's a lot of similarity. Michael sitting in silence in the room when you think he's someone else.
There's no way.
Michael on the truck.
Yeah, there's no way Vince Gilligan ever seen Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Oh, he's a weird dude. Come on. He shares some traits with us.
I don't think so. There's no way.
Well, those are the two that struck me most. There are too many similarities between what De Niro does in Cape Fear and Michael Myers does here, and I know it's kind of weird to say, you stole from Halloween 4, The Revenge of Michael Myers.
You might be right. I don't know. This was a huge hit, so it might have reverberations throughout Hollywood there.
Sure.
So the audiences loved it, like we said, and they went to it in droves. I do want to quote that scene, though. Sheriff Meeker's like, you just created a lynch mob! And Loomis is like, you don't have a police force!
True or false? The best part of us doing these have been our attempts to impersonate Donald Pleasance every episode.
He's so good. He's such a great actor.
He really is.
These men may be our only defense. Or whatever he said.
I didn't hate that, the logic behind it. I hated how that was set up, and then almost the very next scene, the lynch mob just destroys an innocent person. Like, the next scene.
It's Ted Hollister. Sorry, Ted Hollister. You're dealing with a lynch mob here.
Like the Sheriff Meekins is like, you create a lynch mob, and we have the morality play about, well, is it a good thing? Or we don't even have time to let it play out, because the next scene, they're, let's kill him!
I saw his face, Bill. Right. Let's go, shit, man.
Okay, well, I guess it is really a bad thing.
So we have the sheriff's daughter's t-shirt.
Cops do it by the book.
What does that mean? Why would the daughter be wearing that t-shirt?
It's a sexual innuendo, you see.
The cops do it by the book, but that's her father's shirt that she's wearing because it's huge.
Look, she was a blonde with nice boobs,
it was a horror movie,
so obviously.
It makes no sense to me why she would be like, cops do it by the book. All right, that's a really bad pun.
I mean, I can't believe you're... I
don't know what it means.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay, so more best scenes. We have a crazy kill of that sheriff's daughter. And everything in the house is pretty decent, I would say, in the sheriff's house.
I really didn't hate a lot of stuff in this movie, I'll be honest. That kill, that one specific kill, Michael ends up taking a shotgun, and instead of making
noise, gonna shoot it.
Right, he jams it through her and through a door. Again, we have the kill where somebody needs to leave their feet and being impaled on something, like there is with every Michael Myers.
Scary
and this
stuff.
One is daughter Meekins getting shoved up, getting a shotgun through the torso.
Another crazy kill of boyfriend Brady. I like that he's so courageous there.
You're finally getting some protagonists that'll take him hand to hand. I like that too. I dug it.
And he fights him, and he punches him, and he hits him with the shotgun. Yeah. And he's really terrible at loading a shotgun. I like the whole thing between him and Sheriff Meeker there. Sheriff Meeker throwing barbs at him like Bad Boys to Martin Lawrence, Will Smith style there. I liked all that stuff. I just think that scene where he's spitting on the ground and his looks kind of hokey, like we said.
I can't believe that made Final Cut. I really can't.
I like that whole finale, Mike. I like that they call for the state police. That's actually somewhat smart. I don't like that Loomis and the other guy leave. We'll talk about that.
Some of the explanations I thought were decent too. Michael, for whatever reason, goes to a power grid and knocks out all the power. So that's why we're in complete darkness throughout the town, because somebody's been fried on the main power grid. That was a nice explanation.
Of course, Michael finds an old rusty kitchen knife in the attic when he's facing off with the girls in the attic there. I like the whole scene on the roof. That made some sense. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really smart to only shoot Michael's feet as he's walking on the house, because if he was doing trapeze acting, putting his hands out to balance himself, it would look kind of goofy. And he's got that no neck anyway, so he'd look goofy in a full shot. But they did a nice job there. Climbing roofs is apparently very hard to do. That was a good sequence, getting the girls up there. You think they're trapped, then they find the wire. I mean, again, you write yourself into a corner, and then your characters have to figure their ways out, and it's very smart, and it works for me. I love those 1980s trucks and cars throughout this movie, Michael. It's a reminder of better days, cars.
The Bob Seger Like a Rock Chevy commercial.
You can fit three people in the front seat, yep, of the car, of the truck. I mean, it's just the good old days.
I also like there's plenty of homages still throughout. They were trying to honor the original Halloween. When Michael Myers is the one sitting in the rocking chair, daughter, yes, Meekins doesn't see that the cop is dead until she lights the candle. We have one light illuminating his face.
I love the little shot of his face in the background of when the deputy was still alive, just by the moonlight or whatever that was. Agreed. Like you said, that was great.
And I love Donald Pleasance has a couple face-offs with Michael. And the first one at the gas station where I don't understand the explanation of how he would be firing at him and Michael just disappears.
Why is his face still wrapped all this time later? Like, this has been 10 years, and he's a burn victim after 10 years. His face would not still be wrapped. Again, I love how Michael beats everybody up in that truck. That was an awesome scene where he rips off the guy's head and he gets thrown out, dies in a ditch.
Where the hell was he?
Under the truck.
Was he holding on under the...
I guess.
So this giant defensive lineman was able to not be on the road in the undercarriage of a truck and not be scraping the ground with his back?
Apparently. I mean, remember, these trucks are built Ford tough.
Yeah, apparently.
And Chevy trucking. I don't know if it was a Ford or a Chevy. People get mad at me for that.
Man.
I don't have a preference, by the way, Ford and Chevy people. Whatever you like, I like.
He likes a Honda.
Not after my car just broke down.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
I like that Dr. Loomis's line, "It's over. Michael Myers is in hell." It's pretty good.
He is always bringing the one freaking over-the-top one-liner, and he does it this movie as well. You know what else I like, too? I like that the mask is actually a Halloween. I like the lore of Michael Myers,
right,
in the town of Haddonfield. So they're selling his mask as a Halloween costume. Jamie's getting bullied at school about having a psychotic uncle. He's being treated with, like, an actual story here that people know about him. So, like, you already hit on. Yeah, the cops believe Loomis when he comes in. He's not just this crazy man anymore. There's a history of this happening. So somebody's going to be aware to it and be realizing that he might be telling the truth.
I'll have a few quibbles with that costume shop, the discount store, or whatever that
is,
but we'll get there. All right, so Rachel is eating a huge, shiny roll, a Midwestern roll with cream cheese, and telling her mother she's on a diet. Don't they know anything about omitting carbs in the 1980s Midwest?
No way.
That's a worse scene. That's a worse scene.
No way. The 80s diets were like just less cheese on the cheese
just
fries.
Just less bread.
You want some cigarettes on that sandwich?
Some more worse scenes after Michael escapes. Doc Loomis is all over him like me on kale. He's just right. No, he's totally screwed up. He actually finds Michael sooner than anybody else, but it's not where he's following him on a trail. It's that he just has to get gas.
Yeah.
And Michael happens to be at the gas station.
Yeah.
That's kind of ridiculous.
It is. Awfully ridiculous.
And of course, they make all the to-do about showing everything blowing up, and then all they do is show him crawling away from everything blowing up, and we're supposed to believe that he got out.
And not to mention, everything blowing up is triggered by Michael driving away.
Yeah.
Like, he just leaves the garage that he's at, and as he passes Loomis, then for no reason whatsoever, the gas station just erupts into flames, and everything gets blown out.
Was
he spending his time rigging explosives throughout the whole thing, waiting for Loomis? We've seen the showmanship from him before.
He connected. He's an electrician at heart. If he didn't have this rage monster inside of him,
he'd be beautiful lighting.
He's great with telephones and disarming them or shutting them down. He's great at all that
Jesus.
Stuff. So, yeah, we get the first showdown between Michael and Loomis here. It's the worst sales pitch ever by Loomis. Whatever you do, don't go back to Haddonfield. Leave those poor people alone. For all he knew, you know, Michael could have forgotten it all.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, Haddonfield.
Oh, yeah, Haddonfield. Let's go back.
And what if my niece is still alive?
Yeah. It's so dumb. We have Insomniac Jamie, Michael's niece on his sister's side, living with this family, the Carruthers family. Jamie and Rachel have Bradley Cooper, Sam Elliott level, over the top, on the nose, in your face conversations, how much they ought to be loving one another.
I'm sorry I'm here. And otherwise, you can go on your date tonight.
Do you love me as a real sister? Or just whatever, a fake sister? I mean, give me a break. Nobody talks like that ever. It's terrible. Those types of conversations piss me off.
Yeah, well, that was 80s horror for you. That was very on the nose. And that's kind of, again, what illuminating what made that Halloween 1 so special is that those characters talk like actual teenage girls and actual teenage guys and not this forced expositional dumps.
All right, so here's the controversial take that I've been building till now.
Go ahead.
That girl, Jamie, Danielle Harris, terrible actress.
Really? Bad. You were not a fan.
And she's not getting help from the director. But, I mean, she has ability. It's just, it's not honed in the right way. The scenes don't work.
I think she plays terrified well. But I agree as far as, like, the scene where she overhears Rachel complaining about having to babysit her. And she's, like, supposed to storm off. It's terrible. When she's like, I'm sorry you can't go on your date tonight. Everything would be better if I wasn't here. It's terrible.
You need escalation in a story, number one. And this is going to be my biggest problem with 5. Escalation in a story. And basically, she falls apart in every scene where she has to be emotional. There's no, like, degrees of it. There's no,
right.
And it really should build. Like, it should fall apart the worst in the middle of the movie or whatever her arc needs to be at its low point. And they don't do that. It's just her sobbing, crying every single time she's supposed to be a little bit upset. And I give them the credit that, of course, she should be upset many times over. I'm just saying they don't. There's no, like, arc. There's no descent.
Maybe that's why they decide to take her speech away entirely, and this is the sequel.
The next movie, which is so much more aggravating, though.
Oh, it's terrible.
My God. Anyway, we'll get there.
I didn't like the... I don't have qualms. I agree. There's absolutely no build. It's one extreme or the other. But when she is terrified as that extreme, I don't hate it. I think it's passable. Up to when Loomis confronts Michael at the gas station, it's not a bad movie. We're decently paced. We're getting there. We have the over feeling of dread that's throughout all these Halloween movies. And then they just try shoving so much exposition in the next half hour. Like, the next half hour consists of Michael's talking, getting closer and closer, that world closing in, like we always talk about. The panic of the townspeople and that redneck militia type deal. The Rachel Kelly Brady love triangle. Jamie's emotions. Loomis's return to town. The town blackout. It's all happening within a half hour, and we have to not only substantiate them, but show them and explain them and get the emotion driven out of them, and it just becomes such a mess.
It's a hot mess. There's some goods delivered, like we said, but there's also the worst parenting in this movie that I've ever seen in any movie. So you have a curfew set upon the town by the police. They're canceling Halloween, essentially.
Yes.
You have a group of kids, including Jamie, who got separated from Rachel, a group of kids, you know, trick-or-treating together. All of the parents' cars descend upon them at the same time, take their old kids away, and they leave a little girl on the streets during an emergency curfew. What is wrong with these other parents?
Just to wander around, yeah.
Of course you would take that kid with you to some house. Of course you would. You call the parents, you would whatever. You would figure it out if you would not leave a kid alone on the street.
She's sick. She looks like she's got psychic abilities. I'm sure she'll be fine.
Yeah, she'll find her way home. Serial murderer on the loose. She's okay. I'm sure she just got lost from her chaperone. It's just absurd. Absolutely absurd. What's even more absurd, Michael, is that we have fake Michael Myers. This is just ridiculous. It's a false scare, total plant. Are you kidding me? We have one fake Michael Myers pop up, then another. Give me a break. Those people deserve to die.
Can I tell you why I didn't hate that?
I hate it.
Because we just saw in Halloween 2 what happens when Loomis just decides that every Michael Myers he sees is the real Michael Myers and he's just shooting wildly at people.
It's fine.
So at least we have enough of a substantiation now where that's an actual Halloween costume.
They should
and you
die.
Can't just
I have a bloodlust.
You can't just shoot at these innocent people.
I have a bloodlust for pranksters on Halloween night, not just
I see. So just anything that upsets
kids,
you.
Kids, have this, all the sex you want. Make it
but
consensual.
But God help you if you toilet paper my
make
tree.
Make it safe sex, make it consensual. But God damn it, you pranksters in movies? I'm done with you.
You know what also, just the epitome of the Haddonfield Police Department over the years? The town sheriff, there's this maniac on the loose.
Yes.
The town is out of power. There's a citizens militia, right, armed and dangerous on the loose, and he decides now's a good time. I have to be at home with my kid and protect the house. Yeah, you're the sheriff!
Yeah, he should have went to the school. He should have went somewhere more fortified and silly. I mean, number one, sweep the house before you board it up.
That'd be good, yeah.
You know, say, hey, all right, you're a cop. You have a deputy there. Two guys could sweep the house for Michael Myers just in case before you board it up and lock things down. It's so dumb. And as cops, they would do that. It would be ridiculous. This deputy is incredibly inept. I hate that he leaves the Carruthers house just before the actual Carruthers get there. And then there's no connection later to the Carruthers. They're just there waiting for their kids. They don't look for them later on. It's just absurd. They come home to their kids not being home and they don't try and find them. There's no connection there. Obviously, that scene in the school with the pink face and the white hair we've touched on. We touched on the state police driving in and out so fast. You kind of gave me an explanation for that.
It's a weak one, but
of course, why did Jamie go near Michael at the end? But again, I think we both liked the last scene than we disliked.
But that's probably our favorite part of this movie, but it's nothing to do with the through line here. So they have that happens. Jamie does take up Michael's mantle, the psychotic connection.
Yeah, there's no connection. There's no cause. There's no motivation for her to do that. We don't see her increase. Like, again, her character has no arc. She's just a running, scared little kid until the end. They tried to write an arc in, and they tried to just force an arc down our throats.
Oh, yeah, they did.
With this, and it just doesn't work.
So now we have that, and we're going to go into Halloween 5, which is called The Revenge of Michael Myers, and we try picking up. We actually do, in an homage again to where Halloween 2 reshot and reshowed the ending of Halloween 1, Halloween 5 is going to reshow the ending of Halloween 4.
And that's pretty cool. Yeah. Again, we have Donald Pleasance looks even more like Freddy Krueger as Sam Loomis in this movie. Danielle Harris is back. The little girl is Jamie. Ellie Cornell returns as Rachel, but why bother? Anyway, you have Bo Starrs back as Sheriff Dipshit McNot Even Fucking Close. I hate that character.
You're not a fan of this movie, I take it.
Jeffrey Landman, Tamara Glynn, Jonathan Chapin, Matthew Walker, Wendy Foxworth, Betty Cavalho, Troy Evans, Frankie Como, David Urson, Harper Roisman, and Karen Alston also make up the rest of this ensemble. Ensemble is a strong word. Michael, that's it for my cast and crew. Usually I gush over a lot of people. I'm not happy with this.
No, there's a lot of vitriol for both of us in this one. This is definitely the low point of the Halloween franchise. It's either this or Resurrection, certainly for me. Anyway, Halloween 5, Revenge of Michael Myers, doing some specs, premiered October 13th, 1989. So we're not even 50 weeks, about 50 weeks after Halloween 4. We're following it up with a 97-minute runtime, $5.6 million budget. So we're opening the budget again. It made enough money to satisfy the studio. $11.6 million would become the total gross number.
Down.
That's not good. Again, we don't know the split for domestic versus international, but this is the first Halloween franchise film where it's not obviously profitable. Again, only about two times its budget. Actually, a little more than two times. This budget, not great numbers there. Now, the home video and merchandising could have put it over the top in a number like this, but who knows? It's not looking great for the series, and it would still amazingly get worse. Mm-hmm. Directed by Dominique Othenin-Girard, Halloween 5 was written in crayon by Michael Jacobs and Shem Bitterman.
You like my cat?
Shem Bitterman. Another just great names attached to this series all around. Revenge of Michael Myers stars Donald Pleasance, Danielle Harris, Ellie Cornell, Bo Starr, Wendy Kaplan, Tamara Glynn, as also Mike told you. Magnum Pictures and Trankus International produced Halloween 5. Galaxy Releasing is the distributor. Rick Nathanson and Ramsey Thomas are the producers credited, and the lows just keep on coming.
Yes.
Critical reception. You thought 4 was bad. Oh boy. Rotten Tomatoes. 14%.
A low.
Not good.
Very low.
3.6 out of 10 average critic score, with 19 out of 22 being rotten. How three people found this, it's the same thing as, like, we said, oh, somebody found 8th grade a 40 or something like that. Somebody had this movie at 25. How could you be positive about this fucking movie?
I don't know.
And I say that as someone that this franchise is one of my favorites of all time in movie history.
Only 22 people reviewing it is also a red flag. A lot of people they don't want to shit on the movie.
Right. 38% audience score is still extremely low. Average score 3 out of 5. Audience rating on 65,000 plus votes. IMDb, it's still hovering around respectability for a horror film, though it's very, very low. 5.2 out of 10 on 27,000 votes. Metascore of a 29 is probably about accurate.
So Halloween 5 was rushed into production. No surprise
you
there.
You think?
the documentary that's basically tacked on to the end of the Halloween 4 documentary on YouTube. It's all one link. It's called Halloween 5 Dead Man's Party. They're fairly negative, the cast and crew and everybody. They're fairly negative about this entire film and this entire filmmaking process.
We
I thought that was surprising.
We hate being negative, right? We credit ourselves as a film.
But they were during the documentary.
That's why I think it makes it okay for us to not speak highly about it.
That was shocking to me. They're all shitting on this movie and basically apologizing for this movie throughout that documentary. And I thought that was fascinating.
It's basically our permission. I felt like they were speaking to us and saying, Mike and Mike, tell the people. Spread our message.
Yeah. So the movie starts off on the wrong foot immediately. Danielle Harris, the character of Jamie
Lloyd, yep.
She basically says that I don't know why they didn't write the continuation of me being a killer, a zombie killer, a Michael Myers-like killer, a sidekick of Michael Myers, like whatever. They didn't tack onto that. They just retconned it from the beginning of 5.
So they did retcon it. How they retconned it, not to jump ahead, but they basically showed her flashing back, having killed her foster mother, which was Rachel's mother. Fine. She goes to this child mental institution.
And she's like minimum security, by the way. Everybody can visit her. Dogs can come. She can just roam around.
And also, she's totally okay. She just can't speak. Like, she's a normal functioning child that has this psychotic connection with her father. But, like, everything else about her is relatively normal. And so that's basically looking at this objectively. You're like, oh, so she just murdered her mother in cold blood for no reason.
Yeah, and they don't talk about that at all.
No.
And nobody's upset with her about that. They don't explain it.
No.
It's just like, it's so silly. It's so silly. It's such a big scene in the last movie. You figured you'd get an explanation in the direct sequel.
Great jumping off point, too. Great homage. Great. We're restarting the series.
So Danielle Harris hated her storyline in 5, and she hated that she became mute in this movie. I would agree.
It makes no sense.
Listen, there are films like A Quiet Place that honor mute or deaf actors, and then make them seem doubly heroic, not only for overcoming their disability, but for overcoming the plot and fighting the monsters of the movie. This film just seems so repetitive of Jamie just being overwhelmed by her problems and her problems of not being able to talk. I mean, it's so silly. She could just have a pad that writes something
down. I would write the coattails of that and saying that a lot of those times, those movies that do highlight the differences are those people with those differences and disabilities can only be the protagonist because they've learned other skills that otherwise people without those disabilities wouldn't otherwise have.
They have to bend over backwards.
Right.
They have to strive in order to communicate with other people. It's a metaphor for communication and how hard it is at times.
And in
a film like Wonderstruck, in a film like Todd Haynes, in a film like A Quiet Place, those characters work so hard to develop and to communicate. And this movie does none of that. It just shows this girl falling apart every time she's trying to say one word. And of course, they linger on all the negativity of it, of her falling apart, trying to say the one word. And then they have an abusive Dr. Loomis, of course, who's very abusive throughout the film, basically just screaming at this girl to spit it out.
Hitting the notes that he has never really hit before. Like, for all intents and purposes, he's a very deadly serious, very over the top, but he has a history of caring about people.
Yes.
He has a history of looking out for people's well-being.
This movie's offensive and it's aggravating.
Bad.
And it's thoroughly aggravating for them to dwell on the helplessness of a disabled character.
I totally agree.
That's why this pisses me off so much, this movie, right from the get-go. And they don't give her an arc yet again. She doesn't have an arc as someone who can overcome these. It just goes away. She doesn't overcome it. It just goes away. And it's bullshit, in my opinion.
You're retconning a lot of the problems I have.
So we have two cops are the comic relief in this movie. That was a terrible decision.
Oh, my God. The fucking score when they're... How are you being taken seriously? All it was slide whistles and fart noises when these two cops were on the screen. It's like, could you be any more on the fucking nose?
And then, of course, they're making those sounds when a cop who's supposedly 30-something...
Looking through the house for Michael Myers.
He's also hitting on a high school girl.
Oh, yeah, it's gross. Like, what? It's also fucking gross.
Is happening.
How are we supposed to root for these people?
We just shouldn't.
Yeah.
We want them all to die, which puts us in a terrible position. And it's totally different to all the other films where you have capable people that you actually are rooting for.
Right.
That's why
it's such a role reversal. I don't understand it.
Yeah, and it's like the worst that this genre could get. And essentially, a big portion of the documentary talks about how they partied it up day in, day out, cast, crew, little girl in the room, little girl not in the room. All these cast members grew very close. They partied like it was 1989.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Every single night till 5 or 6 in the morning, the makeup department had their hands full, and that's the way, that what happened. It's like Caddyshack, but so much worse.
Little Miss comes in without talented people.
And
Donald Pleasance comes in with actual scars on his face from the night before. Makeup department's like, we don't have to do anything.
I was going on a bender. The 6-year-old girl was there. It was a little awkward. Looking into her eyes as I chugged Maker's Mark.
No, he wasn't doing top shelf shit. This is like Captain Jerry's or something, like Sailor Jerry's whiskey.
They were showing video of the little girl at all of the cast parties.
Right.
With the mask on. The little girl's just doing her thing, and all these kids are just like
picking her up on the chair like a Jewish.
And all the kids are like, woo! It's 4 in the morning. What is happening?
Where are your parents?
No wonder this movie sucked. So, plot, Michael. I like that they showed the beginning of Halloween 4 at the start of this one. That's fine. Basically, it's ridiculous how Michael Myers rolls down a river. It gets out of that sinkhole, just rolls down into a river the second before they blow up what happens down there.
He's so good at avoiding explosions. So Michael Myers goes down. He finds out we're down this river. He gets taken in by this fisherman who's...
Let the absurdity begin, because not only is Michael Myers taken in by a fisherman, minutes after the same cops blow up the upstairs, they cut to a year later and then show Michael Myers killing that fisherman a year later. So the continuity doesn't even work.
Literally just waking up a year later without his mask on. Yeah. So we're under the impression that he's just been laying there for a year. And you can't tell me a fisherman that knows how to hook up a fucking IV of saline or anything to keep this guy alive.
Alive for a whole year. No, of course not. It's a continuity problem.
So he wakes up, kills the fisherman. He's without his mask multiple times in this movie, which I despise. Yeah. He's also treated as a background character in multiple scenes of this movie, which I despised. He's not at all Michael Myers. So he wants to come back, wants to finish the job killing Jamie. Early on, he makes it back to Rachel's house, finds Rachel alone.
Almost kills Rachel, then kills Rachel.
Yeah, she's off early. So now instead of Rachel and Jamie, we have Rachel's friend who's in one scene in Halloween 4. It turns into the main character here. She's Tina. Tina has to be
different actress. Yeah,
has to be the caretaker of Jamie.
And nobody's looking for Rachel. Rachel just poof disappears.
Nobody could give a shit where
Rachel
this girl is.
Rachel is the hero of the last film of a year ago.
20 minutes in, she's offed. She's dead.
Her mother is killed by her stepsister, and yet she is still the greatest sister in the world.
Yeah.
And for her sins of being the most caring person of the franchise, she is off. She's given a shower scene and then killed.
Okay, so here's my question with the setup here. So obviously we're trying to establish that the little girl Jamie has some sort of psychological connection with Michael.
Oh, you think they're trying to establish this in the 17 scenes of her writhing on the ground.
It was hidden, but I picked up on it. I'm not sure if everyone did.
God.
So she has this connection with Michael, and her freaking out is... She implores Loomis to call Jamie. So Loomis calls Jamie right before Michael kills her.
Right.
She's like, Max is barking at something. So we check in. Max is barking at Michael, who's hiding, waiting for Jamie. She has no reaction when Jamie is killed.
None. And when Rachel's killed.
Rachel's killed.
She's freaking out at the whatever the party, the crayon party, whatever they're doing there. But yeah, no, there's no follow-up on Rachel's murder until the reveal of it at the end. And I get it. She's only gone for a day. I mean, that's maybe the explanation there. But nobody's wondering. Like, Tina...
It was her house!
Tina's not wondering where her best friend is at the party of the year.
In her house!
Right. Well, then another girl shows up, and okay, whatever.
So Sammy, this random blonde who has no connection to the series whatsoever, just shows up, and she's supposed to be basically the Rachel surrogate for the audience.
Makes absolutely no sense.
It's
totally disrespectful to the last movie and to characters like Rachel's. And then, of course, for someone as important as Rachel was in the last movie, it's ridiculous how they don't address it.
Okay.
And the characters don't address
it. So the main plot is Michael stalking Jamie again. That's fine. I don't care. Listen, the first scene when we're in the child's institution and Jamie's freaking out, having these visions of Michael and going nuts. The doctor rushes her in and wants to open up her tracheotomy. Loomis comes from out of nowhere
And it's like, nowhere, let her die, basically. Like,
she'll stabilize on her own. And the doctor who's taking care of his patients is basically, let's see what happens.
I think Dr. Loomis at the end of four tried to pull a gun on her at the top of the stairs. I think in that scene, he's telling, I just watched it again. I think he's telling her, let her die.
You're giving it way too much credit. I like it. I would love it if that's true.
I think that's true. And I think that's why he's just not slapping around, but he's shaking her.
Yeah.
And every scene, it's like, spit it out. You know, why are you helping Michael?
I give you a world of credit for finding validation in that. So I'll agree with it. And I hope it's true, but I think you're giving it too much credit.
I think Donald Pleasance is an actually good actor.
Oh, he's great.
And I think he's a phenomenal actor. Forcing his plot lines and his motivations to make sense. Oh, okay.
Interesting.
I think he demands that he has something that makes sense in his plot lines, and that's why he either retcons or he makes sure that his lines make sense, and that always happens. Or they up their game to write his stuff. They make sure they don't do the kooky shit with his character.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely the case. So basically, Michael stalks Halloween night again, all these teenagers who don't care.
But his stalking is so... He's in the background of all these scenes.
Yeah, he kills the boyfriend, and then he drives around at night with the Tina character.
We have to stop. You cannot gloss over that. I have to talk about that scene.
It's going to show up later, but you can talk about it now.
No, we can keep going, but I have to talk about that scene.
Do you want to do it now or later?
Just keep going.
All right, gloss over. I got three more lines for the summary here. So basically, Michael hunts Jamie and kills high school kids along the way, again at this big Halloween party. Loomis, after the Jamie escapes, of course, with her buddy from the mental hospital.
Just leaves the hospital.
No security over there. None. Why Michael just doesn't go into the hospital to kill Jamie?
I have to talk about this scene.
Okay. There's a big car chase where... Apparently, kids can outrun Mustangs.
Ridiculous. But every kid and every adult can outrun any car in this world.
And it's absurd. But Michael, in the woods, has a confrontation with the girls, Tina and Jamie, stabs Tina. Little boy gets away. Jamie gets away. Dr. Loomis is there. The cops show up. Dr. Loomis tells Michael, all right, go back to your house where we'll have our final showdown. Yeah, that's where Loomis, you can get rid of the rage.
Makes up. This motivation, by the
totally
way.
Totally makes it up. So he's not like he goes down breadcrumbs and figures it out.
No, it's just like...
He's just shaking a seizuring little girl throughout the film. It's such bullshit. So Michael hunts the bait that is Jamie at the Myers house after, of course, all the cops who are staking the place out hear that there's a break-in at the mental hospital, and then they're like, oh, the little boy is here. All units to the mental hospital!
Everybody...
Michael Myers definitely won't work into Loomis's grand plan. They're all going to the mental hospital.
Which plan, by the way, they've been following the entire movie up until that point.
He's got like 100 cops there ready to stake out Michael. Why can't you say half the units go to the mental hospital? What the fuck is wrong with Sheriff Meeker? He deserves all that he gets. That's all I'm saying. So Bo Star, you're a good actor, but that character is just bonkers. So Michael, now he has free reign to this house. There's one cop. There's Dr. Loomis. There's Jamie in the house. They don't notice the room of death with all the meat puppets in there somehow. They're cops. They don't notice that room.
The attic.
The attic is Michael's bedroom, and it has dead Rachel. It has dead
all the characters. It's got all the dead bodies in an homage to Halloween 1 where Jamie Lee Curtis walks in and sees all her friends' bodies. And
WTF there, terrible. But fine. All right, Loomis has a trap for Michael. So after... You know, Loomis gets slashed, and after Michael chases Jamie around the house, Jamie could somehow climb laundry chutes after she falls down them. It's the most absurd thing I've ever seen, and there's a lot of that statement going around.
She appeals to his humanity. We've had 5 movies of this guy not having a shred of humanity in him.
I like that Loomis baits Michael back downstairs into his trap, and he gets...
Where did he set this up?
Of course, the chainmail
giant
net.
Chain link net hanging on the ceiling that's released with a lever.
It's like a silver net that you'd ensnare werewolves with. And of course, he's got tranquilizers ready because the bullets sure as hell don't work with Michael. I like this.
Yeah, that's fine.
They trank Michael until, of course, he falls asleep or he gets knocked out there. So, of course, Michael's brought back to the jail. Throughout the film, there's been the man in black walking.
There's an ominous man in black.
We don't know what's going on.
From the knees down.
The ominous man in black breaks Michael out. We have Jamie walk into the police station after she's escorted out. She finds all dead bodies, and that's the end of the movie.
Yay. Okay. Let's do some bests quick if you have any. Do you have any?
I have a few. A few things that I don't mind, I guess. I can rip them off. Jamie is gasping for air. Why is Dr. Loomis in the operating room when that happens?
I don't know.
Leave her. Yeah. Let her die.
She'll stabilize. I promise.
It's kind of awful.
Who are you?
It's awesomely bad. I like the brick being thrown through the window.
The devil child must die.
Yeah, I like that. The record player with no sound and just like static as they're looking, as Tina's looking for Rachel. I thought that was a really cool trick inside the house there. Just that sounded crazy. The line, but in my heart, I know that hell will not have
it. I prayed night that he would burn in hell.
So Loomis gives some great speeches, his exposition dumps. I love that Tina's boyfriend's a huge dick, and then that Michael pitchforks him in the head. It's a great kill. It's gross.
I have to talk about that.
Pitchfork kill number two. They double down. I'm proud that the girl, Sammy, fights him with the pitchfork and then, nope, I have a scythe.
Right. Yeah, you're going to kill you anyway. You're
gross, but kind of cool. And then, of course, at the end, pretty smart trap by Dr. Loomis, like I said. And I love his
absurd trap.
I love his dialogue, though. It's, die, 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 die. I loved it. You, Michael, any bests?
No. There's not. The Loomis line is great. I knew that hell would not have him. I liked that Rachel showed a little character evolution by, like, when she gets the phone call from Loomis telling him that, listen, Jamie's freaking out, you gotta get out of the house. And she sees that the door's already been broken into. She actually leaves the fucking house and calls the cops, so she's not dead right away. That was nice to see, even though she dies soon after.
So again,
nothing much happening here.
Not a lot of good stuff. A little.
This is probably my favorite part. I really did like. We've seen in multiple movies that he's a capable driver.
Yeah,
and so we actually have a setup here for him to actually be using a car as a weapon. I didn't mind that. I hated the way everyone's able to outrun it. I think that's ridiculous. But I like that he actually is like actually has the wherewithal now to be a driver hunting down children.
And there's barely a set of stairs that Jamie hasn't fallen down at this point. But yet she's able to outrun a Mustang in the forest
here. Right, exactly. And
and number one, my car just broke down, so I'm a little sensitive to this. You cannot run over one tree and have your car live. Never mind 10 trees.
Multiple trees.
Give me a break.
And then
Christmas trees.
The big artistic shot at the end where Loomis finally beats Michael down with the 2x4 and suffers a heart attack or whatever, and they fall face to face.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. I mean, he's also bleeding from the guts because Michael slashed him. Yeah, well,
that'll do it to you too. But listen, let's get to this shit.
Worst scenes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We have Tina's boyfriend name is Michael as well. There's a billion other names, but whatever.
Most of the Tina's boyfriend stuff is terrible. Here you go.
Okay. So Tina's boyfriend goes to the liquor store with Spitz and Sammy, and Tina's there to load up his car with alcohol for the night.
Sure.
Okay. Spitz goes back inside just because he's working at the liquor store. Sammy's left at this point. Tina's left at this point. So it's just the boyfriend, Michael.
Yep.
And Michael Myers is there, has a mini pitchfork, scratches up the car. That sends boyfriend Michael into a rage, gets the pitchfork between the eyes.
Right.
Okay. The setup to where this is going is that later that night, boyfriend Michael is supposed to pick up Tina for their date to go to this party, but first she wants to stop and see Jamie. Michael Myers has killed boyfriend Michael.
Right.
And if you want to tell me that he had to take away the body so nobody saw it and he had to hide the body and that's why it took so long for him to get back there, that's fine. So it's nighttime out now. It's not daytime anymore. That's fine.
Right.
Michael Myers, a man that lives his life in a Halloween costume,
right,
had to put on a different Halloween costume, pick up this girl for their date,
right,
even though his only objective, the only thing in the world he cares about, is murdering and killing this little girl. Why does he show up for the date? Why does he show up for their date?
His motivations make no sense.
He's got nothing to do. He showed, and not only does he show up for the date, he listens to her requests. She wants to stop at the store for cigarettes, and he stops at the store. He's just dating her at this point.
Yeah, it's patently absurd. I agree with you 100%. I don't have an answer for you.
Gee, he's a psychotic, inhumane killing machine.
Yeah.
And he's stopping to pick her up at the time for their date that they agreed to.
It's foreplay for him. It's absurd. That makes no sense. So Michael parks in front of this liquor store, right? And he... liquor store, gas station, mart, whatever, mini mart. And he parks in front of the gas station pumps, correct? On the street. So he's not exactly into the gas station.
Yes.
All the cops descend upon, it's like five cop cars, into the gas station lot.
Around Tina.
Around Tina. Because, of course, that's what cops do when they emerge on a crime scene or a potential crime scene. They all come to one point around one person around them.
Yes.
And let the car
car
she is walking towards,
with the masked driver,
10 feet away from her, they let that car just drive away.
Just go. Just leave the scene, man.
It is patently ridiculous.
I don't understand why he picked her up in the first place. It makes no story sense. All he wants to do is go to Janie's pageant and kill her.
Right. It makes no sense. So I already, you know, we already spit fire on Rachel's storyline.
This woman serves no purpose to his plan.
Yeah, Jamie's storyline. He should be going after Jamie, and that would be the end of the movie, and that would be a more interesting movie. That would make sense. Jamie is in this, like, no security prison of mental illness.
She just has a full-fledged breakdown at the child hospital where she's having this meeting and needs Tina to come through. So every attendee in the place is tending to her, making sure she's okay in the very next scene. She's literally walking out the front door with Billy.
You have kids that can run up to windows and throw bricks. You have one lady that's just a loving mother to this girl, you know, mother figure to this girl throughout, which is absurd. If you heard that she just killed her actual stepmother, why would you be motherly to this little girl? I mean, that's just dumb. I mean, it's your year later. I know. I mean, the girl needs love. You'd care and respect for the girl if she's your patient, but I'm not saying, but why would you bond with that girl if you're a nurse at this hospital?
I have no explanation for that.
But Mike, we have to talk about this party.
Listen, I have to talk about this just as a personal problem. Having seen A Star Is Born recently,
yes,
and being obsessed with Bradley Cooper, rock star.
He's a great rock star.
Having seen Halloween 5 and being obsessed with maybe the best song from the worst named band ever. The song playing in the background is a song called Dancing on Midnight from a band called White Sister. Terrible band name. Terrible band name. I Shazam this. I have listened to nothing but Black Eyes from Bradley Cooper and Dancing on Midnight from White Sister over and over again on a loop for the last week straight.
I understand the feeling of listening to songs. When you played me this song just now,
yes,
we stopped and you played it. I did not expect you to play that song. Like, I don't remember that song very well.
I don't remember it being in this movie, but had it not been for this rewatch, thank God we did this rewatch, is what I'm saying.
For this song.
Of just this song.
So it's the best thing about the movie for you.
And it's nothing's close. It's like, it's one, and then the next number is like 74.
I guess that's my takeaway from today. I'll have to go back and listen to the song. I know you're going to play it as an outro.
Of course I will.
Okay.
You'll be lucky if I don't play it right now during this conversation.
Just put it in there, yeah, and then keep the podcast
know.
Going.
Yeah. Loop it.
So, okay. Let's get back to the party.
Fine.
The party's fine, but again, I just don't know why anybody's not concerned where Rachel is, why she's missing.
Did we need a 3-minute sex scene before Michael Myers comes in to break it up and kill them in the abandoned farmhouse?
it's really bad. It's okay that they escalate in the weaponry. There's actually a little storytelling there. It's okay.
And I like that Tina finds the cat with blood on it when she comes back to look for her friends.
Like, I like
that's creative.
I like that the cops get it with a pitchfork.
Yeah,
there.
I like that too.
I like that whole setup. The cops don't investigate because there's fake Michael Myers. Again, I still don't like the fake Michael Myers. It's stupid. All right, so the way the cops mobilize in this movie is just so dumb, and the way they all have Michael in the forest cornered,
yeah,
and they do nothing about it. They let Loomis come out there and say, "Go back to your childhood home,"
which again has no setup. We have at no point during either 4 or 5 have we been suggested that this has to do with the rage inside Michael and that it can be controlled and contained.
Yeah, Loomis,
and that's why he's after Jamie. Loomis just tells us all this. in a speech talking to
at
Michael.
At the end.
Yeah. We don't even know if it's true.
We don't know if it's true. Basically, I don't know if he knows if it's true either. It's just like a bluff to get Michael into his, you know, what is he like? The only way to get this guy is to have a medieval net, a chainmail net.
And elephant tranquilizers.
Yeah, that's just absurd.
So he goads Michael back to house. We're at the Myers house again, and we're upstairs with Loomis, Jamie, and one cop. And one cop, Charlie. And Charlie is messaging Eddie, who's on the outside, another cop. And in his walkie-talkie, he's listening to Michael brutally murder Eddie. And he can hear the gurgling sounds and the struggle for life. And, and the whole while that Eddie is just dying, just being savagely murdered. Charlie, Eddie, can you hear me? Eddie, come in.
Are you okay, pal?
He's dying, Charlie.
You gotta stop peppering in that sriracha with your tacos there, Eddie.
Right. Like he's just got bad gastro, like reflux.
That's just terrible. Oh, absolutely. So I hated the fact that this one guard who actually shoots Michael, right?
Yeah, got
we've seen Michael get shot in the chest, and he's down for a while in every other movie.
Yeah.
And then in the, like, 5 seconds later, Michael pops up.
Right back up. So well, he's learned from his mistakes of getting shot before.
Yeah, his Logan healing powers work much faster, his mutant powers there. It's just so dumb. There's no way Jamie can climb back
climbing
up
that laundry chute is absurd. Michael being able to put his thumb through a human skull, but not being able to pry open the laundry chute door.
And then he's like, maybe this knife will do it. All you got to do is switch it. Michael's smart the rest of the movie. All you got to do is turn your hand.
I did like him stabbing through the gate.
A circular foot. That's all he stabs in. Like the little girl's obviously not there. Just go up, down, whatever. It's so dumb, Michael.
So we get to the finale, the big finale. Jamie's wiggled her way back up the laundry chute. She goes into the attic. And this is supposed to be the big paying homage to Halloween 1, where Laurie Strode finds all her friends dead in the room.
Ugh,
Jamie
terrible.
Finds Rachel's body dead in the room, finds the cop, Eddie, dead in the room. And then we're supposed to see Max, her dog, dead in the room. Why would you include this scene where Max is clearly a stuffed animal, just staring at the camera for way too long? It looks ridiculous. There's so many editing mistakes in this movie, too. In the scene where Tina's talking to Michael, she thinks it's her boyfriend, but it's really Michael Myers.
Yeah.
You leave two cuts in of her lips clearly not matching the audio. You couldn't edit that in post. Like, there's just... So we get Max, the stuffed animal, staring at the fucking camera. We see Rachel for the first time dead.
It's like the fourth time Jamie's been cornered by Michael Myers in the two movies. And of course, this time she just gives up. She climbs into a casket and then she's got something. She'll snap him out of it and say uncle, and then she'll try to manipulate him a little bit. And he cries. They zoom in on one tear.
And he's wearing a man bun too. That infuriated me more than he looks like a Johnny Depp knockoff under the mask.
Yeah, we can't really see his face. We just see the tear. It's just so dumb. It's a bad movie, Mike.
This is fucking terrible. This is the low point for me. I've always hated this movie and the franchise. I've never understood it. The Man in Black subplot is kind of cool. I appreciate
that. That's where it connects to finish up here. What do you think of that?
The payoff. Have you seen Six yet?
Yeah, I've seen Six.
The payoff is okay. They could have been a lot better, but this movie sucks.
This movie sucks.
This movie's just bad.
The Man in Black. It's a little mystery.
Right,
so,
you don't know who the Man in Black is. We'll talk about him, but I'm glad that we did this in one episode. We went a little long, but we were able to condense these two movies.
Oh, my God.
Which are not great. And it does get more absurd, although I have more to defend Halloween 6 with, and Resurrection's just going to be a pile of poop, I think. But
I watched 6. Now, granted, I was doing show notes for another episode. I wasn't, like, really focused. I was lost.
Oh,
completely
it's easy
and utterly
to get
lost.
It's easy to get lost.
So I have to rewatch
that. I'm very
that
excited
one,
about it, but... Like I said, once we hit the end of H2O there, once we were through the Laurie Strode storyline, you could see why the Laurie Strode storyline is where David Gordon Green is picking this franchise up and not the Jamie Lloyd or Busta Rhymes one. We want to know your thoughts. Have you been watching along these movies with us? Did you find value in Halloween 5? I don't know how, but if you did, let us know.
Let us know.
We're willing to have our minds changed.
Sell us.
Reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike and Oscar.com on Reddit. We are in all those places. Tune in, SoundCloud, iTunes, everywhere that you hear podcasts and more.
We got that 6 degrees of MMO challenge number 4.
Probably going to get to that. I don't know if we're going to get to it next week or the week after. Probably after the Halloween stuff.
You could send us your submissions on that. Jamie Lee Curtis to Mike Myers,
yes.
The Austin Powers guy.
The Canadian actor from SNL, not the psychotic serial killer here.
We'll have to tweet about that, and you know, so do send us those.
Yeah, and like we said, we were just part of the All the Horror group. Make sure you're listening to that. We have a new episode from a new podcast on the All the Horror feed every day. We just did ours that came out Wednesday on the 10th.
Showcased 6 other pods in that episode. You know, you can find new podcasts to listen to based on that episode. If you found us through the All the Horror, we thank you for coming back yet again, and we're having a blast with that group.
Yeah, and I don't know if I don't know what the schedule is going to be, but you'll either have recently heard or will be able to hear soon enough the Oscar Sprint profile of First Man. We're doing Oscar Sprint profiles all throughout October, as well as the horror stuff. And we're reaching the end here. We're almost at the end of the road for these Halloween movies as the film comes out next week.
Yeah, October 19th or 18th movie event will be 2018's Halloween.
Pretty excited about that, as you can tell. Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Michael, any final words of wisdom here?
Cops in Haddonfield are really not cops.
Just don't live in Haddonfield. There's a jillion other cities in America.
Yeah. I like Dr. Loomis in the way he attacks the script. I mean, this guy gets some sense out of the dialogue.
Yeah, Donald Pleasance is going to squeeze. He's going to squeeze his character introduction and evolution for all it's worth.
No!
Is Dr. Loomis here? Yeah, guys, like I said, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. We'll check you out next time.
See ya!